Did you know that Nika AATC offers self-paced online courses on a growing range of topics aimed at helping you improve health outcomes for people with HIV? These interactive courses can typically be completed in about an hour and cover multidisciplinary topics such as smoking cessation in people with HIV, geriatric assessment and integration and models of care, managing difficult behaviors in HIV care settings, and using Zoom as a virtual workspace. Self-paced online courses are offered on Rise, Nika AATC's online learning platform. Courses are designed for healthcare providers providing patient care for people with HIV, including physicians, physician assistants, nurses, pharmacists, case managers, outreach workers, and other disciplines. To explore online courses for HIV care professionals, navigate to www.nikaatc.org/rise-courses. That's www.nikaatc.org/RISE-courses, or click the link in the podcast episode description. Welcome to Nika in the Know, a podcast for healthcare providers in the HIV field. I'm Mariana Braitman. Today, I'm sitting down with Michael Rifkin and John Wakira, two New York State certified peer workers and peer consultants, to talk about peer workers and their role in the HIV care community. Welcome, Michael and John.
Thank you, Mariana.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
So let's just dive right in. Can you both tell us a little bit about how you got here and how you became peer consultants? Why don't we start with you, John?
Sure. Thank you. So I decided to get into HIV care after a few years of being diagnosed. The hospital where I was admitted didn't think I was going to live more than a few days at the time. I was in serious condition and actually had a lung collapse while I was in the ICU. I was fortunate enough to have a primary doctor that reached out to an infectious disease doctor to ask, you know, what he should be doing to help me. My story is much longer than what we have time for here today. I've shared this many times before, and to sum it up, I made a promise to help others if I was given a second chance. This was during the emergency surgery in my ICU bed. A chest tube was needed to be inserted in my side or I would have died. It's hard to sum it up, I decided to help others, but like I said, it was from my hospital bed. I did not want anyone to go through what I had gone through back then in 1992. There was little help for people like me. When I was discharged, I called the county health department and the person said, I can't tell you much other than good luck. I dropped the phone. I felt very lost. I did not really even know what direction my life was going to go. And I was not healthy at the time at all. Back then, people were expected to live about a year or two at the most. And most people I know or are new back then had died. I have lost many friends, people that I worked with, and patients that I assisted through the years. I estimate there's probably well over 200 people I know that have died, especially in the early years of HIV. There were no protease inhibitors. There were only two medications at the time. So my thinking was, this is a horrible diagnosis and a thing I have to survive. I needed to take the upper hand or I wasn't going to live much longer. I was only 30 years old and my partner had died while I was in the hospital. So I thought I needed to get into healthcare so I can help others. And that was the start of my journey into HIV, into the HIV community. I started going to meetings. The Ryan White HIV Care Network was my first HIV-related meeting. It blossomed from there and maybe got a little bit out of control at times, but I love what I do now, and it's especially important for me to help others. I want to give back. New York State takes great care of those of us that are HIV positive. And I am happy to be part of that.
And Michael, how about you?
Well, the 2 years leading up to my diagnosis in 2008 was one of severe depression. It was exacerbated by the collapse and end of my 23-year marriage. At some point, as a means of seeking some type of happiness, I indulged my curiosity around my attraction to men. I allowed myself to fall in with the wrong crowd, I guess, as they say. And these were a bunch of guys whose sexcapades were fueled by crystal meth. It wasn't long before I went from being a virtual teetotaler to an almost daily injection drug user. My eventual contracting of HIV was actually the result of a suicidal ideation. So I was known in clinical terms as a hot mess. So following my diagnosis, nothing really changed until 2011. I was actually sort of forced to seek treatment for my addiction to coincide with the start of a 48-week treatment regimen for hepatitis C. You know, everyone's familiar now with the new medications. It's a lot easier. Between the rigors of treatment and the challenges of maintaining sobriety, it was not a good time, not a pleasant time. But with sobriety came clarity. I was able to see that the behavior that I had been engaging in wasn't actually fun and games. I was suffering. And some of the people that I was hanging out with, that they were all suffering as well. So upon successfully completing my Hep C treatment, I was approached by the health educator at my clinic, who asked if I might be willing to share my treatment experience with other patients, some of whom had either failed treatment prior or were on the fence about starting it altogether. The presentation went well enough that I was offered a position as a Hep C peer. I worked part-time. I provided telephone support and in-clinic support to patients that were undergoing treatment. When the first one-pill regimen came out, the need for the elevated level of support that I was providing became less. I was transitioned to the role of a RAP peer. So in effect, with the support of a medical provider and a clinic health educator, I was and I remain inspired to turn lemons into lemonade. The rest, as they say, is history.
John, how has your lived experience been valuable to the work at the AATC?
My lived experience has grown in the past 31 years. I have had serious illnesses to navigate and overcome, and I've been heavily involved on the local, state, and federal level regarding HIV healthcare. This is not to brag by no means. I have taken hundreds of hours of training and have been a community grassroots organizer for years. So what I'm saying, my lived experience is from a consumer and provider and activist role. I have learned from both sides of the fence, so to speak. I am able to assist my fellow peers navigating through their journeys. And I sit at the table to discuss quality improvement on a clinical level. I don't know all of it for sure. I continue learning from others. Then what I learn, I pass that knowledge on to others. From a consumer standpoint, I have been incredibly lucky to have had such a wonderful experience in the past 30 years in the HIV community. It not only benefits me, but it can benefit the places I work with, meaning my input could help overcome barriers to care or help shape a program just getting its traction with quality improvement. I continue to listen and learn as much as I can. I love putting the knowledge or the lived experience to work for myself and my fellow peers. That is an extremely rewarding experience, and it continues still, like I said, after 31 years of being diagnosed. Thank you.
Definitely. And how about you, Michael? What can you tell us about your lived experience and how it affects the work of the AATC?
Well, NECA AETC's stated mission is to provide targeted multidisciplinary education and training programs, as well as capacity building assistance to improve care along the HIV care continuum. It makes perfect sense to include people such as myself and John, have us involved in that process, because through our own experiences and that of those shared with us by other consumers, it allows us to see beyond the textbook. We can identify areas where improvement is needed. Medical providers and supportive staff, they're healers, but they're people just like everyone else. I choose to believe that their actions are always conducted with what they believe to be the best interests of their patients, and might be unaware that their own implied bias, which we all have, might lead to instances with stigmatizing impact. As for specific value that I've brought to the table in the 2 years that I've been consulting with NECA AETC, what comes to mind is my ability to share the valuable resources that are at my disposal. The biggest one, I guess, it would be the network of people working in various capacities in the field of HIV services that has grown exponentially over the past decade. A perfect example is my friend and colleague, John Wakira, who is a champion in the realm of HIV advocacy and one of my heroes. John and I met 7 years ago as charter members serving on the New York State Peer Certification Review Board, and I'm thrilled to be working alongside him in our consultancy roles. So 1 year ago, we brought together a panel of certified peer workers representing various regions throughout New York State, and we conducted a roundtable discussion. The topic was how the COVID pandemic impacted consumers in the areas of food insecurity and homelessness. And we were from all parts of the state and were able to, you know, provide that sort of detail from our respective communities. The presentation was delivered at a NECA AETC virtual conference, and by all accounts, was a tremendous success. I'm especially excited about the podcast series that John and I will be co-hosting in the coming months, which will bring consumer perspectives to the forefront and to the ears of providers.
Can you talk a little bit about some of the diverse ways that clinicians can utilize peer services in their practice? Why don't we start this time with you, Michael?
So for me, this question represents a hot button topic. It's something especially important to address. I have, over the course of my 10-year career providing services to people living with HIV, done so in a wide range of capacities. I happen to receive my HIV care on Long Island at a clinic run by forward-thinking providers who know the value of health education and that incorporating peers into the practice would lead to improved health outcomes for their patients who struggle with medication adherence and or retention in care. So that was where I had my first role as a peer. My primary function there was to provide support in the form of medication reminder calls. I co-facilitated education workshops with the clinic education staff. I eventually moved on. I joined a multi-clinic FQHC here in the city where peer workers were actually integrated into the multidisciplinary team. We worked alongside social workers, patient care navigators. My responsibilities were still supportive in nature, but I had the added responsibilities of being a case manager. I conducted many accompaniments to meet with patients' HASA caseworkers. I would assist with housing applications, and I would help to troubleshoot issues with benefits that would arise from time to time. The other peers and I on the team documented our encounters in the clinic's EMR, and we enjoyed full access, such as scheduling appointments on behalf of our patients across the clinic's wide range of medical disciplines. I have also worked at a multi-location medically assisted treatment program, not as a peer, but as a RAP specialist, where I was tasked with engaging HIV-positive clients who met the RAP program criteria. In this role, I leaned into my certification training as both an HIV and harm reduction peer. Openly sharing my lived experience enabled me to connect with clients who, for one reason or another, up to then had not considered engaging in treatment, or engaged in treatment and were just not adherent. My most recent role prior to transitioning to a consultant role with NECA AETC was a peer. I was working for a managed care plan here in the city. My department worked exclusively with patients who were HIV positive, many of whom were homeless, who were struggling to achieve or maintain viral suppression. So this was at the onset of COVID and the subsequent near 2-year lockdown. So our regular telephone outreach to the most vulnerable of our members had a tremendous impact. The assessments that we conducted allowed us to identify cases where the basic social determinants of health were lacking: food insecurity, housing insecurity, loss of employment, depression, isolation. So my hope is that providers listening in on this podcast segment will consider utilizing certified peer workers in roles that they might not have ever considered.
And how about you, John?
I think there are many ways that clinicians or healthcare facilities can utilize peers. A few ways I've put my peer skills to use in my previous job. For example, contacting patients before their appointment, meeting with patients while they were in the clinic for their appointment. This not only helped the patient in several ways, but by meeting in person while the patient was being seen with their clinician, I was a help to communicate the patient's needs or concerns. I made sure everything was reviewed or discussed before the patient left the clinic. All of us said, gee, at one time or another, said, gee, I wish I remembered to ask my doctor about this or that. So some of the clinicians that I worked with very much appreciated my conversation with the patient prior to them being seen in the exam room. The patient didn't need to sit idle staring at four walls. They could be engaged with a peer to discuss adherence or other health concerns they had. It was a suitable time to say, hey, how's your family or how's the job going? These are all things that can affect a person's well-being. And talking about these concerns helps to build the trust among the facility staff and the patient as well. None of us want to feel like just a number. We're people first, right? Peers can be utilized for consumer advisory boards as well. This is a huge help to a clinic's QI team and the overall health of the clinic too. There are QI committees at all clinics. Peer input can help shape those QI measures being taken and help develop new tools for use, with quality improvement. Peers can help guide programming or services at the clinic as well. I think there's numerous ways peers can be effective in healthcare settings. Most trained peers do much more than making reminder calls or escorting a patient to another department. Peer workers are a valuable connection between the patients and the entire medical staff. Clinics that fully engage with peer workers, I would be willing to bet that that clinic will experience better outcomes overall.
So you each discussed a little bit about the abilities of certified peer workers and the wide range of roles that they could assume. Michael, can you expound a bit on the New York State Peer Worker Certification Program?
Sure. Providers, they should consider just how fortunate they are to have the ability to tap into a highly trained and specialized pool of certified peer workers. In New York State, the curriculum for the peer certification program has been developed, administered, maintained by the Center for Public Health Education at Stony Brook University with the support of the New York State Department of Health AIDS Institute. At present, there are four tracks, HIV, Hep C, harm reduction, and PrEP. To qualify for certification, prospective peers must have direct lived experience in any one or combination of the tracks they wish to embark on. So they can't just be affected by, you know, any one of these, you know, topics, HIV or harm reduction. They actually have to be HIV positive to be an HIV peer, have engaged in harm reduction services, specifically at a needle exchange at some point in order to become a harm reduction peer. The journey to certification is not a cakewalk. All the tracks require that peer candidates complete a minimum of 68 hours of core competencies. Things like cultural humility, trauma-informed care, health literacy, motivational interviewing, just, you know, to name a few. In addition, a minimum of 22 additional specialized hours specific to each individual track must be completed. There are more than 250 certified peer workers in New York State as a result of this program. The peers are highly motivated individuals and would be a great asset in whatever setting they're employed.
And John, is there anything that you'd like to add?
Sure. The Certified Peer Worker Program at New York State is amazing. It's where people like Michael and I have gone through required trainings, as Michael was saying, and we have completed also a 500-hour practicum of training as well. We continue to take training courses to fill the required CEUs each year. I'm sure both of us go well above and beyond those requirements. There is a lot of detail in the training courses depending on what track you are taking. Michael mentioned that there are four different tracks currently, and the benefits of being a CPW are shown in the peer worker's ability to assist patients on many levels of their care. The Certified Peer Worker Program gives you a higher level of understanding, which can be utilized in the services we provide. And utilized also by the clinic. Some certified peer workers are certified in different learning tracks, either individually or several, which means they can assist even more patients. The benefits, again, to the patient and to the medical facility are improved a great deal by employing certified peer workers overall.
Michael, for listeners who might be wondering, where and how do clinicians find peers?
Well, the first place that I would suggest clinicians turn to when seeking potential peer workers is within their own practices. The patients that they serve are all unique individuals. Their lived experience might resonate with others who might be struggling. People living with HIV often face the challenges of co-occurring medical disorders, as well as deficiencies in basic social determinants of health. Some of the most meaningful success stories that I've heard from other peer workers and of my own have had nothing to do with a patient's medical condition directly. By utilizing our personal lived experience, as well as the skills that are honed on the job, peers can inform and guide their patients in a manner that often leads to improved health outcomes.
John, as we begin to wrap up, what else do listeners need to know?
Well, I would say peer workers can be found at the Certified Peer Worker Program at their website, which is hivtrainingny.org. Like Michael said, there are over 250 certified peer workers in New York State. Not all are trained in every track, but once you post a job there, it will be viewed by many certified peer workers. Another place to find peer workers or to advertise a peer job description is through the New York Statewide Peer Network. Full disclosure, which I am chair and Michael is a co-chair of, the peer network shares job postings on a regular basis. And there are several ways a peer worker is described. Some say CHW, some say CPW or peer worker, patient navigator, but we're all peer workers. It depends on your facility, but finding trained peer workers is not easy at times. There are a lot of variables such as location, pay, benefits, hours. Not one shoe fits all. I think New York State, we are learning how to do a better job with connecting peer workers in facilities needing to hire peers, but we need to make this process much easier too, in my opinion. Sadly, some hear the term peer worker and they have no idea what that means. Hopefully this will shed some light on peer workers and be the start of more peer worker conversation sooner rather than later. We both recently completed a survey about peer workers, and there are places that provide training on what peer workers should know. But again, the connection between the peer workers looking for work and the facilities utilizing peer workers needs to be improved. I do have faith this will happen. There are many improvements already in place when it comes to finding or employing peer workers. We just need to think about and discuss this a little bit more. There's always room for improvement.
Michael, John, thanks so much for joining us and telling us all about peer workers and the incredibly important role they can play in HIV care and the HIV community as a whole. We really hope you learned something new today. To learn more about NECA AATC's work and our role in ending the HIV epidemic, visit us at www.necaaatc.org. That's www.necaaatc.org. If you have questions or comments about anything we covered today, or if you have suggestions for topics you'd like to hear us talk about, don't hesitate to email us at podcast@necaaatc.org. That's podcast@necaaatc.org. Stay safe, and we'll see you on Thursday for our next episode of NECA in the Know. This presentation is supported by the Health Resources and Services Administration, HRSA, of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, HHS. The contents are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the official views of, nor an endorsement by, HRSA, HHS, or the U.S. government.